by the powers vested in me by the Federal Communications Commission, I command you to get on the microphone in a serious manner and continue this broadcast.
Whoa, 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 dude, dude. Check the calendar. What was last Thursday?
Last Thursday was Thanksgiving.
Well, what's that mean to you?
It means that I really enjoyed the dinner you brought
me. What's the Christmas music? Dude.
Already?
Come on. I waited 11 months.
Oh, come on, man.
Come on. There we go. Come on, baby doll. Get daddy what he needs.
Here comes Santa Claus. Here comes Santa Claus. Right down Santa Claus Lane.
Oh, this is the greatest. Hey, everybody. Happy Monday. How you doing, buddy?
I was doing pretty well.
What do you mean we're doing well? What do you mean?
Well, first of all, I have to say that I'm a big advocate now of the 4-day work week.
Yeah, I know, right?
Because it works perfectly. And it's not because I don't look forward to coming back to work. That's not it at all. It's the perfect hit of just enough relaxation to where you're energized to come back to work. You get into enough of a relaxed mode.
Proven.
To lift you up.
People are more effective and productive when they're adequately rested.
Exactly.
A 4-day work week is much more productive than a 5-day work week. Everybody throws at least one day away. Everybody.
Very true.
Might be Monday, might be Friday. You know, but they throw one away. Oh, with a 4-day work week, you can't. You got to be productive.
Yeah.
Got to get it done. And you don't mind getting it done because you got a 3-day weekend coming up.
Exactly.
The savings in running the business itself, the utility costs, the commuting costs for your workforce, it just makes so much sense. And the study in England said it was 32, not 40. Not 4-10s, but 4-8s.
Yeah.
And like, was it like 77 companies over in England took part in a study?
I saw recently that it had gone up to 100. So now there are 100 British companies that are taking place in this pilot.
Nice. And of course, all jobs don't lend themselves to a 4-day work week. You know, there are service type industries and there are different type jobs that are going to need to be around, you know, 5, 4, 5, 6, 7 days a week easily. And that's fine. But a large majority of the working population can live better.
Somebody pointed out that in some jobs they already do it. Like I think in the UK, firefighters are 4 on, 4 off. Now, those are 12-hour days.
Right, right.
But still.
Yeah. And there's a system. I'm not sure what the exact time schedule is here in America for like firefighters, which is an excellent example. But they have so many days on, so many days off. And it's just better for their state of mind. They have a much more well-rounded life and well-rounded physical and mental state of being. So it's, yeah, oof. Oh, Benny says, you didn't go with Blue Christmas? No, come on. And Elvis Christmas. By the way, thank you for indulging me. That was really sweet of you. I appreciate that. We have a little war on Christmas at home going at my house. And I hope you guys had a wonderful Thanksgiving weekend. I don't mean to rush right on through. There's plenty of great things that happened over the 4-day weekend. All of us, whether we traveled or stayed home or had people come visit or went to visit families and friends, long-lost friends reconnected, family saw each other again. I got to meet some new friends. I'll tell you about that a little bit later if you want. We had a very special evening at my house. It went incredibly well. But I warned you way back when you guys were bitching and moaning about the political commercials that there was even more danger coming down the pipe because the Christmas commercials are upon us. They're everywhere. You can't swing a dead elf without hitting a Christmas commercial. I think it's an old saying. I think it's Dutch. I'm not really sure. But they're everywhere. But just had a great weekend. I'm in the Christmas mood already. You know, the lights are up. Not at my house. That's part of the problem. The war I'm having. But the lights as you drive around are up. You know, you see more and more Christmas lights, especially this last weekend.
My lights are already up.
Your Christmas lights?
But they've been up for several months now. And there's a reason why.
Why?
A very good friend of mine, when I took my summer vacation in Las Vegas, a very good friend of mine loves just lighting up rooms with lights just year-round. That's her thing. So she gave me this wonderful strand of lights, and I just came home and put it up. So it's been up for months now. So I'm already decorated.
I remember when the pandemic first hit us and the first Christmas of lockdown happened. And people really took great pride in leaving their lights up, you know, after the fact and leaving them up through January and February, even into March, because it just gave people a positive little shot of affirmation, little shot of joy, a little smile, you know, a little subliminal smile when you saw Christmas lights out there. I love this time of year. We talked about this last week as the holiday season kind of got underway and we got into our bones. I'm really looking forward to this year's holiday season. My wife, I think I've mentioned it before. My wife's more of a Halloween girl and I'm a Christmas guy. You know, so it's a good marriage. It's a good mix of creepy and cute and Yule log-ish, you know, and sappy. Sappy is the word I'm looking for. Creepy and sappy. That's our vibe, Melissa and I. And she doesn't, well, to be fair, we lost my father-in-law last year, right around the holidays. And this will be my wife's first Christmas without her dad. So, and I'm respectful of that. I'm understanding what it means to have this constant reminder that her dad is no longer with us. But we can get into that later, too. I lost my mom about 7 years ago, and I don't think I've ever been closer to her than since we lost her. I think I speak to my mom on a weekly basis, daily basis. You know, think about her more than probably than I used to, because I used to take her for granted, which is a horrible thing to admit, but it's honest, you know. So I'm trying to curb my Christmas enthusiasm around the house, just out of respect for Melissa and what she's going through for her first Christmas without her dad. So I got to get my Christmas elsewhere. I got to sneak out to get my Christmas jam on, you know, in my car. I'm going to probably string lights up inside my car. Some battery operated Christmas lights. I know it's probably a traffic distraction and maybe even a safety violation, having like Christmas lights up inside your car. But I've seen people do it, so I think it's probably legal. And you know, I'm having a merry little Christmas, as it were. You know what I'm saying? I think you do. Thank you very much. You, my friend, worked through the holidays, and I'm proud of you. I appreciate that you did that. Can't be easy. Can't be easy working through the holiday.
In some ways, though, it's not all bad. For one thing, I really appreciate you and Melissa bringing me dinner. That was great.
It was our
much
honor.
Appreciated.
Pleasure, man. Pleasure.
And two, it's not entirely bad to be here and enjoying a peaceful shift, you know, and just kind of keeping an eye on things and knowing that there are people out there who are still listening. So in a way, it's not the worst time to be at work if you just want a calm, easygoing evening. It's actually rather pleasant. That is not, however, an invitation to have me do it again next year. But it's not so bad if you have
to. No, I hear you. There are much worse ways to spend the holiday, you know? I mean, it's always good if you can be friends and family. And, you know, Melissa was bummed that you had to work. You couldn't just come up to the house and join us. You know, but we're happy to put together a little to-go plate for you. Let you know we're thinking about you. And it's weird what the holidays do to folks. It really is. Some folks, like we mentioned this before too, some folks just dread the holidays because it's a time of great stress, it's a time of great anxiety, and sometimes, you know, too many sad memories of Christmas, people we've loved and lost at the holiday season. Holidays remind us of things that we've lost. I'm painfully optimistic, though. You know me. I'm like ridiculously optimistic.
I know, and it's one of the few things about you that I find absolutely revolting.
Well, again, that's why you and I make such a good team, too. I mean, you know, I'm sappy, and you're like arsenic cynical. I mean, you're like, you take cynicism to the level of mortality.
I've got enough coal for every stocking in the Puget Sound.
Careful, that's our future, coal you're sitting on. Don't worry, man. We're going to need that, man. Oh, but I hope everybody had a healthy and happy and restful holiday break, and you rejuvenated and revived your spirits and got to see the friends and family that you miss and take for granted sometimes. You know, I didn't get to see my brother and his family, but I spoke to them, you know, pretty extensively. My brother and he had a big gathering. I've got two new grand nieces, I guess, or I guess that's what's the terminology is. My niece had twin girls. So they're grandnieces, right, for me, right? Is that the right terminology? I think I got it right?
I have no idea.
Yeah, because, I mean, cousins,
I'll
I get
their word for
second
it.
Or third cousins, depends on how many, you know, how many steps away from the actual brother, sister, aunt, uncle relationships you have. That's where cousins, that's, they're not like first nieces or second nieces. They're my niece's children, so they're grandnieces to me. I'm their granduncle, right? I'm their grunkle. So the house had two brand new babes in it. They're 12 weeks old, twin girls. And I swear, dude, my niece is phenomenal. You know, it's tough to have, you know, your first kid, but when your first kid is a pair of twins, you don't have any learning curve. You just got to hit it hard and hit it fast and become good overnight. And she really has. Megan and Nick are doing beautiful as new parents. And the girls, Matt, you know, it's not, I love it. They're not like Tiffany or, you know, Cassidy. And no disrespect to any of the girls of, you know, like 1,000 girls with the same name, you know, with the weird spellings and all that crap. And much respect to all of you if you have a very common name that's spelled uniquely. That's, you know, that's your claim to fame. My niece named her girls after their two grandmothers. So I got these two baby girls in our family, 12 weeks old. Their names are Shirley and Judy. And my wife's like, it's like they're on a bowling team. You know, they're already grandmas because they got grandma names. My wife's like, when's the bowling league party at the Golden Corral? You know, the banquet. It's nice. I like it. It's fun. I'm having a good time. I hope you guys are having a good time. It's crazy-ass world out there, and there's plenty of stuff to talk about tonight. I mean, plenty of stuff to talk about tonight. You know, it's funny you mentioned the four-day work week. I was asked in the hallway by some of our support staff. They're going to do a feature about a four-day work week, and we're going to be the champions, you and I, Matt. We're going to be the face of the movement for a four-day work week. What do you think of that, huh? Sounds good?
Sounds great. One less day I have to put up with some of the stuff that I put up with.
Are you already arguing with texters? The show's not 10 minutes old.
We got a priceless text. I won't name the person who sent it. But
just
here
now?
We are. Get this quote, Spike. Wrap your head around this.
Okay.
Facts aren't truth. Facts aren't truth.
Wow.
Wrap your head around that one.
That might be the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
Carlin time.
No disrespect intended. Wow. I don't know how to even address that. Facts aren't truth.
I do.
Well,
look at it this way. Think of how stupid the average person is, and then realize half of them are stupider than that.
Preach it, George. Amen, brother.
Now hold on a minute. You know, we've been asked by management to try to be more empathetic with our audience and try to see things from the other perspective.
Well, there's a saying about I try to see things your way, but I don't think I can quote that one.
But then we'd both be wrong, right? I could agree with you, but then we'd both be wrong. It's like, you ever see that thing where there's a big six painted on the floor? And one guy's looking at it from above and says, that's a 9. Other guy looks at him and goes, that's a 6. He's looking at it from different perspectives, right? And they're both right. It's just from their perspective. So facts aren't truth. Let's dissect, if we may. We can take a moment, do a little therapy.
Well, you don't have long. You've got about 3 minutes.
It's all good. You know, people can spin facts to make their own truth. Does that make sense? You know, it's talking about like cherry picking statistics to prove your point. While they may be factually accurate, it doesn't guarantee that they're truth. Does that make any sense? I mean, I can understand how people, and we all take in our own information, our own stimulus, our own support system of news, our cognitive dissonance. I love that word, cognitive dissonance. where we only want to hear things that reaffirm what we already believe so that we feel better about ourselves having believed these positions. And those positions don't have to be right or wrong. The fact that we're hearing other people affirm them and support that we're not alone in our thinking, that's a healthy and good thing for all people to feel. That's why massive groups of people can believe totally idiotic things. And I'm not going to point any QAnon fingers at people because I like those people when they text. I really do. But that's how people, large groups of people, tend to be overwhelmed and believe things that are just impossible, not even close to being true. So I'm going to ban you from the text for a while, Matt. We're going to play nothing but Christmas music. We're going to pick up our spirits and move on down the line, as they say, in a lot of great rock and roll songs. There is a lot of stuff to get to tonight. I do want to talk about this really briefly because I think it's really, I think it's a welcome step toward progress. It's a little story. It's just a nugget of a story. I think it was earlier in today. You didn't even bother to put on the list on it. It's so small. But the Seattle Police Department has changed their...
Because I knew I put it on the list, you wouldn't talk about it.
No. I'm getting better. Well, this is supposed to be our gymnasium, our proving grounds. We're going to learn how to do...
Good Lord, I'm screwed.
No. It's all good. It's a tiny story about the SPD. Seattle Police Department has changed their dress code, appearance code, allowing both beards and tattoos on the Seattle Police Department officers. Now, I think this is for a couple reasons. First off, I know that recruiting is hard. Finding qualified applicants has been hard. You know, pay incentives, signing bonus incentives have all been needed to be brought into place to keep, to try to refill the void and of the missing policemen from all the people who quit, who lost their job because of COVID vaccine restrictions. And I'm going to make a bold and prejudiced statement here. This may be a very bigoted statement, okay? I think that there's a new tolerance of hairstyles amongst the Seattle Police Department. So that an afro hairstyle, a natural, they used to call that back in the 70s when we were allowed to make statements like that. Braids, like dreads, are now all allowed by the Seattle Police Department in addition to visible tattoos and beards. And I don't think it's just a matter of having to fill the empty spaces. I think it's a matter of, you know, we've got qualified applicants, but they have visible tattoos. We've got qualified applicants, but they got the wrong haircut and refuse to have their haircut. That may be part of it, but I also think it's more an effort to become more inclusive of the community that this police department serves, to have people that actually look like you on the police department. And it's a tiny little story, but I think it's a real step toward progress for the SPD. And congratulations, I think, to them. So, We'll take a little break here. I'll go unplug Matt's Twitter and his text line. It'll all be good.
I've already unplugged Twitter.
You're good. We'll be right back after these. It's Kyra Knights. We're glad you're with us. Happy Monday.
The snow is snowing. The wind is blowing. But I can weather the storm. What do I care how much it may storm? I've got my love to keep me warm. I can't remember.
It is going to get dangerous out there, isn't it? Yeah.
We're going to see just how many people do not know how to drive.
What do I care if icicles fall? I've got my love.
Having done several decades in the Midwest, it's always funny, not ha-ha funny, but a little amusing, I guess, to see how people take the first snowfall in this part of the country.
You know, it's funny. Folks that were raised in parts of the country that can drive in snow, that grew up driving in snow, and we learned from trial and error. I mean, I know you come from the South originally, but you spent a lot of time in parts of the country.
Yeah, I spent 2 decades in Minnesota, yeah. Wisconsin, Michigan, yeah. So.
You know. And to be fair, you learned by trial and error. We all made these mistakes on the road that we learned from.
Exactly.
And a lot of folks have never had the benefit of that. And you try to be more understanding of that. When I see folks out there just acting like total clam dips when they get behind the wheel in a snowstorm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but see, the thing I've noticed about clam dips is that they can be literally as happy as a clam in their clam dipness.
And their dipitude. Yeah.
That's the problem.
It's going to be scary and dangerous for some folks. You're right. It's going to be scary and dangerous for folks who aren't used to it, who moved here. A lot of folks have moved to town recently. We saw a stat this summer about how many people have relocated to the Great Northwest, the PNW, in the last year, in the last 5 years. And we got some snow last year a little bit. The year before, I think we had a white Christmas 2 years ago. I think it was two. It might have been three. I've lost all sense of time. Thanks, COVID. Stole a whole year from my life, if not more. But folks who don't know how to drive in the snow, they think it's just like, okay, it's just like rain, right? No, it's not. It's a lot about physics. It's a lot about engineering. It's a lot about counter-steering. It's a lot about counterintuitive to what your normally driving habits dictate you do to be safe. And the folks, I talked about this with Chris Sullivan, the one sitting in for G. It's not enough to have chains in your car. It's really not. You have to know how to put them on your car. And I know that sounds ridiculous to anybody that's ever put chains on, but think about the first time you did it. There's a little bit of a learning curve with putting chains on. And the time to learn is not in the dark, in the snow, on your knees, side of the road, poor lighting, traffic rolling by, you know, where any slip could end you from a driver not paying attention. It's best to practice putting your chains on in the driveway of your home or on the street in front of your house when it's dry and you've got good light. Because if you know how they go on, the chains on your car, if you know how they go on, when it comes time to put them on under adverse conditions, you'll have some experience and it won't go as badly as if you try to learn on the job under the worst circumstances. And people forget how hilly the city is. I mean, we drive every day in this town, and pretty much no matter where you're going in the city of Seattle proper, at least, you know, the city's built on seven hills, much like Rome. And people don't realize that this city in the snow is just crippled for a couple of reasons. First off, the terrain, a lot of hilly terrain, but also the fact that we're not a snow city. Snow cities like Minneapolis, like New York, Detroit, you name it, anything up north, Spokane, you know, snow cities have snow infrastructure. They've got adequate plows. They've got adequate salting in most cases. I grew up in a city with salt. We had salt bins in my town, in Baltimore, at the top of every hill. So you didn't need the city to come over and rescue your amateur butt. You get out there when it started to snow, and you'd bring a shovel and throw some salt down on the hill as the snow started so it didn't accumulate, so you could be able to drive in and out of your neighborhood. That was just part of life in a city that was accustomed to snow. But this is not a snow city, although we have been getting more snow of late than we had in the first 30-some years I lived here. I've been here 33 years now. I'm still not local. I get that. But I kind of understand what to expect around here from winter, but that's changing. And it's climate change. I'm not saying it's all man-made because I don't want to get in that fight tonight. There's enough fights going on the Twitter line already or the text line already. By the way, 888-973-5476, 888-973-CHIRO is the text line. We'd love to hear from you.
Speak for yourself.
I think it's telling that a texter got into it with you from the minute the needle hit the record, when the first music of our show started. This guy went after you for a topic we weren't even talking about. And I went back and just looked at the thread count, you know, the text you and he had. And this guy has texted the show, and no disrespect to you, texter, you know who I'm talking about. I didn't mean to insult you when I said the thing you texted was maybe the dumbest thing I'd ever heard. Didn't mean, I shouldn't have insulted you. I meant to insult you, let's be honest. I totally meant to insult you. I shouldn't have insulted you. I shouldn't have taken that to be the first club I pulled out of my bag, was to insult you. That doesn't do any of us any good. But you've texted the show over 100 times. in the first 30 minutes of our show. I went back and counted them. I'm not exaggerating. You texted the show over 100 times. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. I hope you had friends and family over. Or that you hung out at the neighborhood bar with your buds or whatever. You watched some football. You ate some turkey. You watched a dog show. You rooted for the little, what won this year? That was a bulldog. I forget what it was. He was gorgeous. His name was, I think it was an English bulldog or a French bulldog or something this year that won. The Frenchie, I think, won at the dog show, the national dog show on Thanksgiving after the parade. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving. And I hope that you have somebody that you can talk to. You know, I hope you have somebody out there in your life that you can talk to. Oh, come on. I said climate change. I didn't say it was man-made. You got to admit it's climate change. You got to admit that we're getting hotter summers, drier summers.
I am baffled.
Warmer falls.
You can
more
disagree
snow.
With the degree of which it changed. You can question certain things about that. But I am baffled by this idea some people have that Earth is this unlimited resource where no matter what you do to it, it is stronger than you. It seems to discount the idea that human beings can actually do things that damage their the area they inhabit. That's not scientifically even logical. There are ways to care for and not care for the Earth, your home.
And without doing that, I mean, think of the Earth as the house you live in. If you don't do some maintenance on it, it's going to fall apart. I mean, I know the Earth heals itself. There are vast instances where, you know, look at Chernobyl, for example. You know, they blew up the nuclear radiation and now like a forest has grown there. And there's like, you know, deer and antelope hopping around. And of course, they all got three eyes because of radiation. But that's beside the point. The Earth will, in time, reclaim. When everything's shut down for 2 weeks because of COVID, remember how the water in Venice became so clear again because we stopped polluting it for a few weeks? Problem is we won't stop polluting it. We won't stop burning the fuel. We won't stop running the cars. We won't stop pumping crap in the atmosphere. And you can say that these are all cycles that always take time and they always go blah, 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 blah. Problem is the cycles are running just on a fast track. So, yeah, come on. There's an old saying that would be really appropriate here. What is it? Get a life. That's what I was trying to say. Yeah, that's it. You know, we have probably 100,000 listeners to the show. And it's not wise. It's not fair. It's not good use of our time to let one person's agenda dictate what we do. Unless it's my agenda. Because that's kind of how it works when you got a show.
And as the producer, I've tried to set an agenda, but we all know how that goes.
But come on, just because I use your show prep as more of a guideline than a hard, fast rule.
It's a friendly suggestion.
It's a friendly reminder. It's options. It's like, you know.
Well,
it's
we
like,
all need options.
It's like I'm Tiger Woods and you're Tiger Woods' caddy. And we go out on the field, right? And Tiger can't win without his caddy. But Tiger still makes the decision which club to pull out.
That's a fair point.
Right? And the circumstance dictates what club you pull out. It's not like you start with the one, and you play the two, then the three, then you go to the irons, and you start playing the four, the five. You play it all the way through until you get to the wedge.
And unless you're a certain part of our fan base, then it's all clubs all the time.
Yeah, it's all clubs all the time. You know, if with some of these people, we got a golf bag full of baseball bats, you know? But when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Well, you know the saying, I'm the type of guy that always brings a baseball bat to a golf game.
There you go, man. You know, you're trying to play chess with a bunch of guys who are playing tic-tac-toe, man. Come on. Give yourself a break.
Hey, it's four-dimensional chess, four-dimensional, man.
Yeah, okay.
Right.
Whatever. Yeah, they're all Vulcans. Yeah. Live long and prosper. We'll be right back. It's Cairo Nights. I'm Spike O'Neill with Matt Butler. We'll be right back. Don't go anywhere.
Folks I love, me and my former best friend.
this is our new family anthem. Who is this? This is awesome.
But I still wish them love. I don't like half the folks I love.
This is the pride and joy of Tupelo, Mississippi, former professional boxer Paul Thorne.
No kidding.
Yeah. Very talented guy. Love the way he writes his songs. Felt it was apropos with the holidays and all.
Oh, yeah. That's the thing about family, man. You know, you can't pick them. You can choose to love them, but that doesn't mean you have to love them from a close distance. You can love them from far away. Some family are much better loved from far, far, far away, as we all know. Welcome back to Cairo Nights, everybody. I'm Spike O'Neill along with Matt Butler. It's been a weird first hour, man. We really got nothing done. We really didn't. We let the inmates run the asylum for an hour there, Matt.
And that differs from other nights.
No, it doesn't. It's exactly what we do every night. If we have 2 more hours of inmates coming up. We're not going to do that, I swear. I meant what I said about the Seattle Police Department, though, expanding their appearance doctrine. I don't know what that's the right word is. Let me get Chef's
policies,
story.
Policies, I suppose.
Yeah, I guess.
Would be
yeah, that's probably the better
cones.
One. Their policies for public appearance. They have decided, they've revised these policies to allow more visible tattoos, beards, and different varying hairstyles. I touched on this briefly last time before the break, and I think it's important enough to go back for one more dip. I think the police department in this city and every other city have gotten a horrible rap, an unfair rap, based on the actions of a few, very, very few bad apples, a very, very small minority, small percentage of a minority. I mean, it's just ridiculous how many, many good cops there are as opposed to the very, very, very few bad ones. I think that's true.
Well, I would push back, though, that we don't actually know accurate statistics on that in a lot of cases. Like, we
agreed.
Don't know how many of these cases have been covered up. So while I would agree with you that the majority of police officers are great, upstanding people, I would say that the incidents over the course of history, particularly in southern communities towards racial minorities, have been underreported.
Absolutely. And the fact that we're now coming to learn about these cases and that tolerating these unlawful, inhumane, you know, policies or practices, I should say, practices, not policies, practices. We're learning about them now. We never didn't used to hear about them, let alone find out about them, hold cops accountable, expect more. You know, so I think that alone is it, the fact that we have this information now and it's being talked about now more often than ever is progress. But what I was saying is that police are often incorrectly painted with too broad a brush. You know, the defund the police was the stupidest campaign. We know that was the stupidest campaign slogan ever devised.
And also not an accurate description of the intended policy.
Not at all. Not at all.
It should have more accurately been called police reform or
yes,
reallocation.
Right. And I think everyone could agree that certain police departments needed some reforming. And that's kind of what I saw in this story about, we'll let you have tattoos and beards. And, you know, rose in your hair or whatever it might be, because for a police department to be accepted by their community, it helps when you look more like the members of a community. When everybody has to have the same look and the same haircut or, you know, there's a sense of, and I think, and this is what I was going to say before, and the reason I'm going to get back to it, I was going to say something pretty controversial, maybe inflammatory. I think that when everybody was forced to look pretty similar, you kind of got the same similar background and mentality of people applying to be police officers. And I think opening up the appearance policies is going to at least open the door for a more broad swath of human experience from both a racial, ethnic, and socioeconomic backgrounds to join the police force, to become a more representative service for the community.
And next hour, I can tell you a story from my personal experience of why inclusion matters based on an interaction I had with one of my friends over the holiday.
Ooh, do tell. We'll be right back after these. It's Cairo Nights with Spike O'Neill and Matt Butler.